start off by saying thank you to the committee members. Can we please give them a round of applause? If you have never been involved in convention committee service, I highly recommend getting involved with convention committee service. You learn a lot about yourself. It takes a lot of work, a lot of principles, a lot of traditions, a lot of concepts into putting this and placing principles for personality. So thank you guys so much for your hard work and your service. I also want to thank the programming committee to believe in me and my recovery to bring me out from sunny South Florida all the way to this freezing ass cold weather. Right? You know, when I got the call or the text message, because I saw that, like, a Baltimore number was calling me, and this is not my favorite level of service, by the way. Let me just say that. My favorite level of service is sponsorship, right? So when I got the call, and I didn't answer on purpose. I didn't answer on purpose, and I got the message. I was like, oh, my God. All right. I called them back. They're like, hey, would you be willing to come out? And I'm like, okay, when? And they're like, spiritual speaker. I'm like, I called my sponsor. I'm like, they want me to be the spiritual speaker. I'm like, are they aware that I curse? Yes. Like, are they aware that, like, I'm a little effed up and rough around the edges? And my sponsor said to me, Dana, it's not about being the spiritual guru of a person. It's about being yourself, being okay to be yourself, and sharing your message of Narcotics Anonymous. They said, oh, I said, so when I was a newcomer and I saw all those people throw chairs at Area, that was them being spiritual and being themselves, right? But the reality of it is like, Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. For those of you that have heard my story, I'm sorry. My story hasn't changed, but I will fill you in on the new things because I am, like, the right now sharing kind of addict, right? So let me tell you a little bit about how I grew up, what brought me here, XYZ, right? I was born addicted to crack cocaine. I come from a long line of addicts. My dad overdosed, passed away when I was in eighth grade. My mom, she's still an active addict. At the age of 3, my mom gave up custody of me, so I did not end up in the system. And my mom's parents, who are my grandparents, raised me, right? My first memory is not a very good memory. It was when I was a kid, right before my mom gave up custody of me. And it was my father coming home when we were laying under the Christmas tree, and he tore the Christmas tree down on me and my mom. My mom, when she did decide to make that decision, I couldn't understand it at the time, but little did I know that it was going to be the best decision of her life for me to be able to give me stability. So I grew up in the 90s, right? And in the 90s, you don't get raised by your grandparents. You know, that's not a normal like it is today. I did it way before it was cool. And my grandparents raised me. When I got picked up, I always felt different. You know, they would be like, oh, who's that? I'm like, that's my grandparents. But, like, little did I know that, like, my grandparents were keeping traditions and principles instilled in me as a child, right? I wouldn't have had that with my mom. I had a great childhood, great, great childhood. I did, like, Girl Scouts, you know, Girl Scouts Honor. I did basketball. I did national cheerleading. I traveled the world. But something never felt completely right inside of me, right? Like, I always looked for something more. More was, like, my drug of choice because nothing was ever sufficient for me. So when I talk about, like, more, I'm talking about more attention, more lying. It didn't matter what it was as a kid. I just wanted to be able to be accepted. I always felt different. I remember being made fun of in kindergarten because I have a lazy left eye. Right? And, like, I had to wear a patch over my right eye, and, like, because I couldn't see. And, like, I would get made fun of, and all I wanted to do was be accepted by my peers. Right? So I would lie. I would say whatever it is that you wanted me to say. If your favorite color was purple, my favorite color was purple. If you liked rock, I liked rock. Like, it didn't matter. Like, I was really good at lying to myself and chameleoning myself, not knowing later down the road it would only make me something that I never thought I would want to be, right? So growing up, my grandparents were always like, Dana, don't be like your father. I'm like, I don't understand what that means. She's like, don't be like your father. Your father does drugs, and he beats up on your mom. Okay, cool. So I heard this my whole life growing up, and then at one point in time, I wanted to, like, understand what was it that I never got to meet my father. I met my father twice my whole life before he passed away and overdosed. And that's when I started to get experimental, right, with a mood or mind-altering substance. It doesn't matter what I used, right, because the reality of it is that the feelings behind why I use is most likely the feelings why you used. And, like, I just never, ever, ever could be okay in my own skin. I was always uncomfortable. So I started to seek out something to make this stop, right? Like our 11 step talks about, like, we search for a conscious contact with the God of our understanding. Like, little did I know that that's what something that I always wanted and wanted to achieve. And I didn't know that there was a program called Narcotics Anonymous that gave me an 11 step because that's what the drugs did for me. The drugs shut this down. So I continued to use, right? I barely graduated high school. I went into college. I did everything that I said I would never do, right? I came in 2009. My best friend introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. For you guys know that she introduced me, right? She would go to meetings. And she'd be like, Dana, why don't you come to meetings? I'm like, me? Get clean? With those losers? Yeah, right. Like, I didn't want to get clean. I wanted to die to the disease of addiction just like my father. So, but I would go to meetings and support her. I would have blood running down my neck, and I would pick up counterfeit clean time because I really, really thought the glow-in-the-dark key tag was really cool. No, really. And, like, I did everything. Like, I came and I judged you guys, and I said, you know what? I haven't sold my butt yet, right? I hadn't been to jail yet. I hadn't done this yet, and what I found out that yet equals you're eligible to. And all those things that I said that I would never, ever do, I ended up by doing them, right? And so I had an everything must go sale in the house. I pawned everything. Like, for those of you that laugh could probably identify, because I did things against my own will because I no longer wanted to use anymore. I ended up by getting locked up for a year. Thank you very much for those who do H&I. H&I, hospitals and institutions that bring in meetings to addicts that can't get out, completely saved my life. When I was in there, H&I would come in. I would sit up front. It was the only contact that I had to the outside. And, like, they carried the message. You guys carried the message of Narcotics Anonymous, right? When it was planted in 2009. When I got out, I didn't get clean. I did not get clean. Mind you, I was still on probation, right? And I thought that I could do everything to get away with using in the system. And I know you guys know the insanity that I'm talking about because we go through that in our first step, talking about the inward and outward unmanageability, right? And that outward unmanageability was what I had just said on top of doing all the things that I thought I would never do. But I heard the message, and the seed started to grow, which was planted in 2009 for me. The second I got off probation, I said it's a great idea to get clean. You know, and the theme of the convention is the spiritual awakening, awakening of the spirit, right? If you're here, your spirit is already starting to awaken if you're new. So welcome, right? Welcome. My spirit started to awaken on July 4th, 2011. Now, that's not my clean date. They always say, Dana, remember the last day. If you don't remember the last day, you're doomed to repeat, right? That's what they say, those cliches, the stupid things that we never want to hear when we're in that moment. And so it was the day before the last day. I had to go to treatment. Now, Narcotics Anonymous does not endorse treatment. However, it is a part of my story. I was born in Broward County, got raised in Broward County, got high in Broward County, and I got clean in Broward County. And I only say that not to boost or boast, but I say that because if your desire to stay clean is more than your desire to get high, you will stay clean. Right? And I needed that protective bubble to be able to help me stay clean a day at a time. And when I went into treatment... It was probably one of the best decisions that I ever made, but it was July 4th and they couldn't run my health insurance, so I had to wait. The next day I took Granny down to Overtown with me, which is the ghetto, and I ended up by copying and I had her and I put her in dangerous situations. And the reason why I bring this up is because it's going to be a part of the men's process later by staying clean, right? My clean day, I remember looking up at the fireworks on the 4th of July, wanting help, not knowing how to get help. I was at the end of my road. And July 4th, as I'm sitting there looking at the fireworks, I'm like, wow, what did that represent? Freedom. That's what I wanted. I wanted freedom from active addiction. I did not know that Narcotics Anonymous would be able to do that. Mind you, when I went to meetings in 2009, right, I would nod out and people would be like, keep coming back. I didn't know if you guys were sarcastic or you really meant it, but I kept coming back, right? And I'm grateful for you guys for being tolerant. And the reason why is because... You know, when when I got clean and I got out of treatment and I came walking through those doors of Narcotics Anonymous, I had no hope, no dreams, no self-worth, no self-dignity, no self-grace. The only thing that I had going on for myself was self-hatred, and I didn't have the courage to kill myself. I didn't. And people would say things to me, and I'm going to read something, and I apologize, I don't have my literature, but I do have it on my phone, and it is on airplane mode, so it will not be disturbing me. I love the third tradition. And the reason why is because before I got clean in 2011, remember, I was in and out of the rooms. I didn't think that I could get clean. All I wanted to do was stop sticking steel into my neck. I thought that I could still smoke weed. I thought that I could still drink alcohol. But guess what? None of that worked successfully. I tried in and out of the room since 2009 to 2011. And when I got here, I'm going to read this. Tolerance reminds us that judgment is not our task. This is from the third tradition, guys, out of the It Works How and Why. The disease of addiction does not exclude anyone. NA, likewise, cannot exclude any addict who desires to stop using. We learn to be tolerant of addicts from different backgrounds than ours, remembering that we are not better than any other addict in a meeting. We learn to practice tolerance of addicts who don't look like us, think like us, or share like us. We teach by example, pressuring new addict members to talk or act like we do may send them back to the streets. It certainly denies them the right to recover and learn in their own way. And the reason why I say that, or like I read that, is because the third tradition is the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using. And when I came to meetings, I didn't know about traditions, right? I didn't know about them. But people would come up to me and say to me, I shot more dope than you spilt, kid. I'm old enough to be your grandpa, kid. And all I could say to them is like, you know what? I'm sorry you're a bad drug addict, but I didn't spill my fucking shit. Right? And like the reality of it is that I didn't know that the unity was being disunified in those moments when we start to separate ourselves from doing more drugs than the other person, you know, whatever it may be. And like, I did not feel welcomed in Narcotics Anonymous. People would talk about me and my track marks being blacker than the color black. I felt shame. I felt guilt. And thank God for our literature, man. It says all we need is one person to believe in us in our recovery. And when I got out of treatment and they said, Dana, get a sponsor. I said, a sponsor? You mean people that like will take me to the doctor and like sponsor me that way? They're like, no, Dana, a sponsor is someone that walks you through the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concept of Narcotics Anonymous. Get one. So guess what I did? I got a sponsor. I got a sponsor. My first sponsor, she was very ODOP, which stands for One Disease, One Program. You know, she told me, Dana, Narcotics Anonymous is home. You don't need to go anywhere else. Right? She also told me, sit down, shut up, take the cotton out of your ears, put them in your mouth, because no one wants to hear what you have to say. If we want to know how to get high, Dana, we'll ask you. Like, very old school Narcotics Anonymous, like, shut up, work steps or die, motherfucker. Like, that's the Narcotics Anonymous that I come from. Very, very old school. Unfortunately, it's not like that too much these days, which I kind of wish it was, because honestly, if it wasn't rough around the edges, I probably wouldn't be here.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And, like, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for my first sponsor. My first sponsor taught me how to be a woman in Narcotics Anonymous. Listen, I didn't look like this when I got clean. I was shot out. I'm still shot out, right? But I'm just okay with being shot out. I guess that's the spiritual part my sponsor talks about. I don't know. But, like, I came in here, my backside was hanging out. My front side was hanging out. You know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to be accepted, kind of like what the triangle of self-obsession talks about in our IP, right? Like, that self-centeredness, the Latin, and then our self-acceptance pamphlet that it talks about. Like, I didn't like myself. I hated myself. And I started working the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and I started to see how my life was completely unmanageable. I started to see how I struggled with being honest because it was based in fear, rooted that you would not love me or like me or push me away, right? And, like, thank God for, like, the sponsorship and my NA friends. I started working steps. I got, you know, a relationship with a power greater than myself, which I struggled with. I struggled with having a relationship with a power greater than myself. I didn't like the word God. I didn't like the word higher power. I didn't. I come from a background that, like, my grandparents shoved going to church down my throat every Sunday, and I did not like it. Hated every second of it. So when I got here and I start to hear those words of higher power or God, you know, you guys say stupid things to like good orderly direction or group of drug addicts or guaranteed overnight delivery. I was like, I'm not buying that. I'm not buying that. That's bougie and not me, right? But like what I didn't realize is that like I was skipping from 2 to 3. And like our literature talks about that if we pass over step 2 with a minimum of concern, we'll find that the rest of the steps don't work. So what I had to do in our It Works How and Why talks about this is that I changed the word, higher power. It talks about it in our It Works How and Why, and it says, we came to believe that spiritual principles could restore me to sanity. Because I believe in honesty. I believe in courage. I believe in hope and willingness and brotherly love. Like, I believe in all those things. And, like, I remember going through that and building that relationship with a higher power to get to a third step. I don't know about you, but my higher power has a funny sense of humor. Right? I had 6 months clean. 6 months clean. And I was told that I was never, ever be able to get pregnant. Ever. Here I am 6 months clean, and I got pregnant with an ectopic pregnancy. And for those that do not know what that is where you get pregnant in your fallopian tubes. You cannot have the baby. The baby is a danger to you. It could kill you. And I remember being on my third step and them coming to me and saying, Dana, you couldn't have kids then. You really can't have kids now. Oh. Right? And our third step talks about, like, changing our perspective. Right? It talks about that in our basic text. It talks about it in the works, how and why. And when I say perception is huge because that's what the third step starts to do for us is change the perception. So, like, I remember looking at them and being like, you're not God. Like, you're not God. I can look at the glass half empty. I can look at the glass half full. I can be grateful to have a cup of water in it with it. Or I can be like, what the fuck is really stopping me from refilling this? You know what I mean? Like, it's all different levels. One of my favorite things that I always say to my girls is that a dead clock shows the correct time twice a day. So every situation always has a silver lining. Now, I went to meetings and I shared my butt off to where point people were annoyed with me. I know you know what I'm talking about because I know we all been annoyed with some newcomer that raised their motherfucking hand and says the same shit over and over and over and over again. That was me. Hey. That was me. Right? And I had 6 months clean and I had to sit on my hands and like I wanted to get high because like here I am. I'm walking through this ectopic pregnancy and like I wanted a child. Why did I want a child? Because I wanted something to love me. Right? That's all I wanted. I wanted something to love me. And it wasn't the time. And I went to meetings and I shared and I shared and I shared. And you guys would say, Dana, keep coming back. You're right where you need to be. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And I'm like, go fuck yourself. You're a dick. Don't want to hear that shit. Like, that's the things that, like, you know what I mean? Like, those things we don't want to hear when we're in that moment. And at 6 months clean, I thought, and I almost made the executive decision to leave Narcotics Anonymous. But thank God I held on, and I didn't leave 5 minutes before the miracle, because today I have a 10-year-old. She'll be 11 in next month, but she's still 10. I try to keep her as young as possible, but she will be 11 next month. Let me say I'm very grateful for that, right? I got a relationship with the father of my child, and it's not the one that I thought. You ever hear in the rooms, be careful what you pray for, or you might have to unpray for it? No, I'm serious. I would sit there, like, before, after this all happened, I'd be like, God, please let me and this guy end up together forever. And now I want to unpray that situation so bad, because I ended up with him in the way that I didn't think I would, and it's more of, like, we don't even co-parent. I'm talking about these traditions being applied in my life. And when I was going through, you know, postpartum depression after giving birth to my child, the disease of addiction saying, Dana, use the kid against him. Dana, get him where he hurts. Thank God for the single parents in Narcotics Anonymous. One of my best friends, he lives in New Jersey. He was the one like, Dana, like, listen. She needs a father too. And in that moment, I had another spiritual awakening because I wanted my kid to have something that I never had. A present father. Right? It didn't matter how I felt about him. Right? Because, like, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of animosity. There's a lot of, like, hurt there. from that relationship, but our traditions teach us how to deal with others so I don't kill you. My unity may look different, but my common welfare is my daughter. The unity must come first, and it does not have to be from his side, it has to be from my side. The group conscience that we have to come together and talk about certain things, because Lord knows I don't want to have a conversation with this man ever. But I do because, like, there's certain things with my daughter that has to be discussed. And the fact that he does have a desire for a membership of showing up as a father, right? Who am I to deny that? Who am I to deny a man wanting to be present for his own daughter? Who am I? Or the fact that, like, they can have personal autonomy, which our fourth tradition talks about, in their household, and I can have personal autonomy in my household, and no, I will not make my household look like your household, and your household does not have to look like mine. But what's most important is that she has two homes that love her. And if I would have left 5 minutes before the miracle, I wouldn't have had that. So that happens. I get pregnant. I walk through all of that. I start going through a custody hearing. Not so much fun. Really learning to place the principles before personalities. And then I'm here and I have a kid and I'm like, how am I going to even provide? Like, I work in treatment at this point in time. You know, I was at the bottom of the totem pole and then something said, Dana, go back to school. So I went back to school. I'm talking about long sacrifices, long nights, and like Narcotics Anonymous has taught me self-discipline, which is one of the hardest things that we can have because we suck at consistency. I mean, let me speak about me. I suck at consistency, right? And you guys would say, show up 30 minutes before the meeting, stay late, help. You know, whatever it is, guess what I would do? The same things that you guys taught me, going to school 30 minutes early, sitting there, asking questions when I didn't understand, didn't care how stupid I sounded, because I wanted to learn. Staying 30 minutes after, talking to the other students, understanding different perspectives. Now, let me tell you, when I first applied to go to college, they did not accept me. I have a background. Perseverance that our steps talk about, right? Like to keep going no matter what. Like that spiritual principle. I had to apply and appeal and then demand to meet with the dean of Florida Atlantic University. And then they sat me down and said, you know what, Dana, you are the best students that we ever have here. You guys are determined. You guys are honest. It would be an honor and a privilege to have you at Florida Atlantic University. And I went back and I got my bachelor's, right? I had to do the same thing again for my master's, even though I was already a student there. I had to do it again and they continued to deny me and I had to appeal and appeal. And like what that taught me is that if I want anything in life, it doesn't come easy. Because once I got my master's, I had to do the same thing with the state of Florida to get my license, right? And at this point in time, you know, school was being put first. I was still going to my home group. I still had a service commitment. I still had sponsees. But, like, recovery started to almost take a back seat in my recovery. I don't know about y'all, but it happens because we get full lives here, right? And, like, what I do know is that I started to question my membership of Narcotics Anonymous. Am I the only one? Because my mind be like, Dana, you've been clean for a while now. You can go do this. You can go do that. Like those mistaken beliefs that the disease of addiction wants me to feed off of. But what I do know is my third traditions, when it's set, the desire to be a member, once I say I'm a member, it comes with responsibility, man. I can't just show up and loiter with the intent. I got to get a home group. I got to work steps. I got to get involved with service. I got to sponsor someone, man. So at that time, I made a recommitment, and I got involved with the South Florida Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. Fuck that. That shit was hard. I had to learn about myself. I became programming chair. I then did entertainment the next year. I did programming again, and then I went to the board of directors for the South Florida Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, which the board oversees the committee to make sure no finances, because, you know, some people like to steal, and it's fine. We still love you. Oversee the finances on the committee. Let me tell you what. I became the president of the BOD. I used to write fraud checks. The bank account's in my name. It's mind-blowing. Like, I used to do a lot of harm, and, like, this is the amends process that, like, Narcotics Anonymous talks about, right? Like, I hate when they say, like, clean time speaks for itself. Yes, in the amends process, that is one of the most misquoted literature pieces in Narcotics Anonymous. Clean time speaks for itself in the amends process, right? Because by the time I get to a 9-step, I've gone through a 4-step. I've done a searching and fearless moral inventory. I started to learn about my defects of character. I learned the difference between a defect and a shortcoming. A shortcoming is when I choose to act on the defect knowing it will cause harm. Because sometimes, listen, I need a little chaos in my life. And that's some real honest stuff. I'll lie for no reason. I'll be like, why? It's serious stuff, man, you know? And, like, I found myself at 10 years clean wanting to commit suicide. And we don't talk about that enough in here. Like, really wanting to commit suicide. Like, it was not about getting high for me anymore. Isabel, Dana, drive your Chevy off the side of the road. Like, and I don't... I would be crying hysterically in between sessions with my patients. Hyperventilating. And, like, my disease telling me, like, Dana, you can't go get help. You are the help. Like, holding me hostage and me allowing it. My first sponsor taught me that victims don't recover in Narcotics Anonymous. Right? They don't. We don't. And then what she meant by that is because in those moments when I was hyperventilating, it came to my mind that, like, I will look for any excuse to go get high. Including, and not limited to, someone not answering the fucking phone when I think they should. Including my sponsor. And my first sponsor said, Dana, get a relationship with the literature. Because there's going to be a time when no one is around and you're going to look for a reason to blame someone. Victims don't recover. The only thing between you and a bad decision is God and the literature. And when I was hyperventilating, what I did is, like, I like to play these little games. I have the literature everywhere, in my office, at home, on my phone. And I said, I'm going to do White, which is the Living Clean, the Journey Continues book. And I will just open it and I will start to read wherever I am. And it happened to be, you know, in times of illness, in the back. And, like, I'm like, okay. You know, so I ended up by going to seek outside help. Now, for those that say that that is an outside issue, I beg to differ. We can debate after. I'm very big on traditions. I will show you where it says in our It Works How and Why. Anything that affects my recovery is something to talk about. Because there was points in times where I did not want to come to Narcotics Anonymous. The disease of addiction was holding, and I was allowing it to hold me hostage. I looked for people with experience, and the fact that, like, when I came in here, I couldn't undo the DSM-5 in my head. I couldn't. And nobody had the experience, and I cried, and I didn't understand, and I didn't want to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous anymore. And, like, my sponsor said things to me like this. The reason why you can't find anybody, Dana, is because you're the one that's meant to help the people that come behind you. Go fuck yourself. I don't want to hear that. I want a solution. But, like, she was right. My sponsor says things like, Dana, what's your relationship with the spiritual principles? What do you mean? I know how to be honest, no, but, like, what's your relationship? Because the second that I start to have that inward unmanageability, it's because I'm in conflict with my first step. Because I can't either be really honest with myself, I'm lacking surrender, some type of acceptance, whatever it may be. Staying clean was one of the best decisions I ever done as I started to make these amends in my life. The amends process, and it says in our literature that sometimes the best amends that we can make is just to stay clean. And sometimes it's about mending the behavior. And, like, my grandparents, you guys know that they raised me. Excuse me. And our guiding principle workbook that we have, it's beautiful. You know, there's a line in there that says that in our second tradition that talks about, like, I ask, how can I be of service instead of being demanded to be served? And, like, that's what I do for my grandparents. Every Sunday I go over and I see my grandparents. I help them in any which way. Don't ask me to come hang out on a Sunday. Don't ask me to come speak on a Sunday. Don't do any of that because Sundays are reserved for my grandparents. They're not going to be here much longer. And that's the amends process because I would never show up. I would hurt them. I would rob them. I would steal from them. I was that addict sneaking into my grandparents' jewelry box while they were sleeping, going to pawn to be able to get one more. The amends process, like, let's talk about my mom for a minute. She's still in active addiction. And me getting so angry at the fact, I'm like, Mom, you know what I do for a living. Like, you watched me go through this. You came and visited me when I was locked up. You put money on my books. Like, what are you doing? The intolerance that the third tradition talks about and not having the empathy or compassion for my mom. Struggling. And I'm going to read something. I know I'm running out of time. This is out of the Journey Continues. It says, learning to accept the things we cannot change and take action where it is appropriate is just not part of recovering from addiction. It's a part of growing up. Many of us are like overgrown children, still wanting to have things our way without regard for anyone else. Often this means that we go through a painful adolescence in the rooms. Whatever our age, maturity comes to us when we use spiritual principles rather than defects to deal with the reality. Incorporating principles into our lives allow us to understand the difference between right and wrong. Many of our most crippling defects become powerful assets when we let go of self-centered fear. And the reason why I bring this up is because, I don't know about you guys, but I struggle with a defect of character called control. Oh yeah, you guys can identify, that's great. I do that, and I'll call my sponsor and be like, she's doing it again. My sponsor's like, the second that you think that she's going to be any different, you're not living in reality, baby. Like, you need to be restored to sanity. I said, yeah, I know, but it's not fair. She's like, you sound like you're 5. What are your relationships with the spiritual principles? And I was like, I don't even know. I said, honestly, Spawns, Disney fucked me up, okay? I just, the fantasy and all of that, like, wanting people to change, like, all of it. If I'm tied to an outcome, I get hurt. The second that I think that you should, could, would, I am now being self-righteous. I am now placing my values and beliefs on you, and I am mad that you do not think the way that I think. And that goes back to our third tradition of allowing a person to have their own way, walk, talk, and act a certain way until they learn. Another thing that I want to touch on is, y'all ever go through a breakup in Narcotics Anonymous? It's like mom and dad broke up, right? Shit's hard. I started to date this woman for a while, and I was with her for a very, very long time, thought that she was the love of my life, thought we were going to get married. Me and her broke up. We know why it happened. It don't matter. But the reason why it's so hard to walk through a breakup in Narcotics Anonymous is because we both have to recover here. And there's things called traditions and unity and brotherly love that I really don't want to do because, like, you hurt me. And our literature talks about in the amends process, it doesn't matter what they did to us. It matters how we show up in the relationship. And sometimes I just want to drag their name to the fucking dirt. Yes. Right? And, like, be like, I'm going to show you who they really are, B. Like, I'm going to show you. But, like, thank God for a first tradition of unity and knowing that, like, my sponsor says things to me like, Dana, are you really going to define that person by their defect? Oh. Like, yeah. What do you mean? And she's like, no, Dana, are you really going to define this person by your defect? Would you want to be defined by your defect? This is a program of change. I said, yes, sponsor, but you see, I'm a manipulative, rational person. I'd be like, listen, sometimes this, you know, hope thing has me in a dangerous place because it will have me staying in relationships way past the expiration date, sponsor. And I have to be honest with myself. And she's like, well, then, Dana, what's the amends process to you? Why do you always have some spiritual shit to say, man? It gets so annoying sometimes, you know? But, like, I love my sponsor. My sponsor lives now in Florida. She was from Pittsburgh. Long-distance relationship, but that doesn't mean anything because the willingness of honesty that I've learned in my first step takes me a very long way. And I'm grateful. I've grown up here in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm forever grateful to be a part of a 12-step fellowship that saved and changed my life. I would not be here without you or the people behind me. Another thing about amends process is that I get to show up and hear things about myself that I don't want to hear. It's very uncomfortable. And that's part of the ways that I make amends to my best friend when I do something wrong. I try not to get defensive. 95% of the time I don't, but the 5% I will. And, like, I'm like, you know what, Dana, just listen, because I ended up by hurting them. You get the wounded look in the eyes that the literature talks about. And the best thing that I can do is just show up, tell you that I love you, and continue to put a foot in front of each other. Because, like, listen, We did a lot of damage in active addiction. Like, you were there for me when I was locked up. Like, you were one of the only people, and I'm grateful to be able to have every page and every chapter with you. Narcotics Anonymous's message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose a desire to use, and find a new way to live. But here's the hit. The new way to live is not just writing on step work and reciting it. It's the practical application of these principles in all of our affairs, right? I can do that, but again, it's what my sponsor says. What's your relationship with the spiritual principles? Do you want to be infective or effective? And I said, okay. You know, and thank you guys so much for allowing me to come and be of service to you guys. You know, they say we have to practice these principles in all of our affairs. If we find that we cannot practice these principles in all of our affairs, we might have to start changing some of our affairs. So, my name is Dana. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. Thank you for letting me share this.